was using marijuana at the time for like 2 weeks. I was mentally addicted to it. I had to have it to sleep. I couldn't sleep without it. I got out of the fire academy. I came home. I got hired to be in that fire department. I was paid on call, so it was like a part-time thing. And then like 9/11 happened, so I remember being at work. 10 a.m. I got a phone call asking me if I wanted to go to New York. The emotions and feelings I felt on that day were numerous. So of course, like, yeah, I want to go, I want to help, I want to do my part. I spent a lot of time there, like a month. We worked like 18-hour shifts. I remember sleeping on the floor of a firehouse in Brooklyn, maybe 4 to 6 hours a night, if we could sleep at all. Saw a lot of shit I didn't want to see. Left a lot of trauma. Like, when I came home, I got night terrors from it. I couldn't sleep at all. It was, like, constantly on my mind, all the stuff that went on there. But I dove right into my job at home. After, I would say, probably 6-8 months of doing that job, I kind of reached out. I wanted to talk about some things. I wanted to get it out. I thought that was the best way. My predecessors there were like, you probably shouldn't. We don't like to be seen as vulnerable here. You should probably just put it behind you and just move on to the next one. You know, it's a job that, like, when shit hits the fan, it has to run like a well-oiled machine. And if you get into your feelings, you can either hurt yourself or someone else can get killed. So after being told that, I, like, stuffed everything. I wasn't going to show weakness one bit. I wanted to excel. About a year and a half later, I got hurt. I was actually in the attic of a house searching for someone. I fell through the attic into their bedroom. I broke all my ribs on my left side, punctured my lung twice. I had some burns on my back. I remember falling, feeling tremendous pain, finding a window, diving out of it, and waking up in Mercy. While there, I spent like 4 months through the rehab, and I was sent home with massive amounts of painkillers. After a while, you know, building that tolerance, they didn't work as well as they did at first. So I decided to indulge a little bit. Once doing that, I realized that all those night terrors, thoughts, all that pain, like, it all went away. And I was like, this is where it's at. Like, all I gotta do is keep myself fed with these and I'll be all right. It got to the point where they were sending me home, like, they were giving me 120 every 2 weeks instead of per month. It was a comp case, so the doctor was like, just fill in my insurance as much as you could. I wasn't complaining about it. And then, like, 6 months later, it all stopped. They cut me off. There was no paper. I tried going back to work. Couldn't figure out why it felt so bad. Didn't know what withdrawal was. Didn't know it was even possible. So I called my brother, and I remember him telling me that I was dope sick, and I told him he was crazy. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't do dope. Like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, an opiate, whether it's heroin or a pain pill, the same thing. And I was like, wow. So it took me a minute to, like, accept that fact. Instead of trying to nip it in the bud, I was like, I can't do it. Like, nobody wants to talk. I can't talk to anyone. I'm just going to roll with this. So I started buying them off the street. It got super expensive. I got involved with some people. The authorities term it as, like, criminal organization, I guess you could call it. My brother was involved with them. Basically, I was running to New Jersey, picking up a box and bringing it back to PA, no questions asked, 3 times a month. And each time I went, they would give me $2,000 to do it. So that fed my addiction pretty good. In 2012, all of my luck ran out. I got pulled over on the turnpike by the state police. Told me my taillight was out, but it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So my taillight wasn't even on, but it is what it is. Apparently, to this day, I don't know who it was, but it was definitely an informant. I had no idea what was in the box of my truck. I never looked, never touched it. I just picked it up and brought it back. He opened the lid, and there was like 25 automatic weapons. So, 2012, never even had a traffic ticket. I went to prison. ATF would visit me once or twice a week and threaten me with federal time and all kinds of stuff. I knew I couldn't talk. People I worked for would probably burn my house down with my family in it. So I had to just, like, keep my mouth shut and hope for the best. They did that for probably 5 months. I wasn't going to talk. They were threatening me with a 5-year or 10-year minimum for each weapon. So 25 weapons, you do the math. I was like, yeah, I'll probably never see the light of day again. So then they started to get into the plea bargain process. And it started at 1 to 2 years. And I was like, man, I've never been in trouble. Like, I'm not going to take that. It ended at a 3 to 9. They went up. They never came down. So I thought it was in my best interest to take a general plea. I did that. They did this big, giant pre-sentence investigation, and the judge took it easy on me. She gave me 1 day less a year, so 2 days less 2 years county sentence. Now, I went into jail on June 2012. I didn't get sentenced until April of 2013. So it took me that long to, like, go through that process because I wasn't having nothing of what they were offering. While in jail, I kind of, like, messed up a little bit, did some time in solitary confinement, like 45 days, somewhere in there. If I wouldn't have got sent to the hole, I would have got parole that day, and I would have went home. But since I messed up, May 31st, they paroled me. I went home. They told me I was going to have to do a program that's called the Day Reporting Center, like an outpatient treatment through probation. Heard nothing but horror stories about it. It's usually like, I don't know, 12 to 16 month program. I completed it in 3. The only reason I did it in 3 is because I always showed up. I was never late. I never gave a dirty urine. I did exactly what they told me to do, and within 3 months I was out, and the day they let me go and said, you don't have to come back, you're good. I ate Lord Tabs that day. After all that shit I just went through, it wasn't enough to, like, stop. I knew that, like, that whole year in jail, I didn't see a psych doctor. I didn't try to even help myself. I just wrote it out, found a routine, and that's what I did for 363 days. I wasn't ready to quit. Just wasn't in me yet. So 2013 to like 15 was complete active addiction. Finally, my family was like, either you do something about this or we're done. So, all right, I went to, I checked myself into Conewago in 2015. I did 28 days there. The way I was looking at it was like, I'm just going to shut these people up, get myself an oil change, and get right back to what I know. Actually, when I got out, I put together like roughly 16, 18 months of just white knuckling it. I had gone to meetings because I had to go out there to get like slip signed and prove I was there. But I never really gave it a chance. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I was just there to pretty much get my slip signed and like roll. They only required me there once a week, so it was easy to do. So that's what I did. So from there until like, I would say it was like May of 2016 to like December. 17. I was all right. Like, I was cool. I was drinking a little bit here and there. But I wasn't using opiates. So I was at a bar one night drinking. I ran into the wrong person at the wrong time. They offered my drug of choice, and it wasn't even like, I didn't even think about it. It was like, yeah, sounds like a great idea. Let's do this. So after that happened, like, I realized I can't afford buying this shit off the street anymore. Pills are way too expensive. I remember people offering, like, I can get you this other thing. It's a lot cheaper. But I wasn't having it at first. I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'll just wait. And then I got so far into that, like, the withdrawal, I didn't want to wait. So it wasn't very long before I switched to heroin. I think a month of snorting it, I was already using the needle. I remember my friend's girlfriend shooting me up for the first time. And it was a wrap after that, man. Like, I was a slave to that thing. It took me places I never thought I'd go. I didn't give a damn who I stepped on, who got in my way. They were getting mowed over. If you had what I wanted and wasn't giving it up, I was taking it. I did whatever I could to get it. I didn't care who I hurt. Not realizing the entire time, like, my family, all the sleepless nights I put them through. So, you know, the obsession and compulsion of this thing is real. It's ridiculous. I cough one night. Let me say, like, I live pretty much 500 feet from my parents' house. I coughed one night. I went to their house. I was like, I need to use your bathroom because I couldn't wait to get home an extra 500 feet. So that's when I was introduced to carfentanil. I did 2 bags of that, and I woke up to, remember how I said I worked for the fire department for the city I live in? Yeah, all my people that I worked with were reviving me. So that right there kind of like set the recovery thing in motion. I really started to think hard about it. Of course, they asked me what I took. I didn't know what they were talking about. I was just tired. It's that whole denial thing. By the way, where's the bags at that were in here? They weren't giving them back. So I would say that was like, I'm still cold. I think it was February. June is when, like, I got sick of this shit. It was exhausting. I was exhausted. I was, like, done. Towards the end, I was finding myself on the bathroom floor at night, a pistol in my mouth, too much of a pussy to pull the trigger. So I reached out, man, and I had a phone that only worked off of Wi-Fi because priorities. For some reason, man, I had a signal on that phone. And the first call I made was to Spirit Life. And the next day, they were picking me up. Looking back at that now, it's definitely God working in my life. Can't explain how I got the signal on that phone. Still don't know. So, yeah, I went there. Totally, like, freaking out about Blue Cross. I've never been to one. But honestly, like, my first night there, that was the only uncomfortable night for me. I was sick that night, and the rest of the time I was all right. I remember being extremely weak, but not sick. Like, I could eat. I just remember being real weak and everything, like, ate. So in that process, I met some, like, really good people, man. The techs there were excellent. They took us to outside meetings, and that's where, like, really this thing started to kick in, man. I sat back, like, I don't talk a lot, I like to watch. I just seen, like, how everybody was so genuine and happy, and just that freedom, and I wanted it. And I wanted to know how the hell you got it, because I couldn't fathom the fact of not using drugs. And a small disclaimer about that whole thing, like, I was that guy that thought it would be all right for his, like, partner to come to treatment with him. Don't fucking do that. It was a complete shit show. I couldn't focus on myself. But I got just enough. And while I was there, I saw Jim. He was the trauma specialist, and he kind of took care of my issues with all that dark shit from before. To this day, I still don't have issues with it. He used the Callahan technique. Skeptical at first, I was kind of like laughing about it, but after digging into that and taking it serious, being open-minded, I had nothing to lose at that point. Like, I had to do something to try and fix this without the use of a chemical. So basically, the easiest way for me to explain that is, like, if you have a smartphone, compare that to your brain, he takes the bad app out and replaces it with a good one. And it worked. Like, it still works to this day. I don't have 90% of the issues I had with that shit before today. So my plan after Spirit Life was to go to a halfway house. I was afraid to go home. I would call back home to see how things were going, and I found out, like, people were just dying, man. Like, it's just the reality. Like, everyone's dying. So I didn't want to go home. So I was going to go to Davis Archway and Butler. And when I got there, they had some issues with bed bugs, and I wasn't court ordered, so I was like, I'm not staying here. Made a phone call, got out, got home. The next morning, I set up my outpatient stuff in Greensburg. And I started the following Monday. That Sunday, I went to my first meeting, which is my home group now, Surrender to Surviving Jeanette. And they did a very good job of making it, it was exactly what I wanted. There were some dudes there that I have in my week today. They made it very attractive for me. And I think that's important for a newcomer, to feel welcome and like this is where you're supposed to be, man. Like, this is where it's at. So that's what I did, man. I joined that home group that night. I had a sponsor within a week. He's still my sponsor today. And I dove right into this thing head first, man. Step work, traditions, I work both. They're changing my life. I'm at 6 right now. I'm in the middle of it, so I really won't share my experience with that. But 1 through 5, 1 was pretty easy. Like, I knew I was fucked up and I had a problem. What am I going to do about it? So the big thing for me in step 1 was, like, surrender my thoughts on the whole recovery process. Like, I had my own assumption of what recovery was like. So I had to, like, throw that out the window and just go with the flow. Step 2... it's never really an issue for me. I always had a God that I believed in. I saw him at work many times on the job, so that part was kind of all right. Step 3, kind of will my life over. Like, I kind of struggled with that a little bit. Like, what's my will? What's my life? Put it in perspective, it was like thoughts and actions. Just, yeah, turn them over, man. Like, your way doesn't work. Obviously, it hasn't worked for 10 years. Why do you think it's going to work now? So that's what I did. And, like, I try, like, so hard today, like, not to hurt people or myself. I don't do it perfectly. But the beautiful thing about this program, man, is if I don't put nothing in me, I have another chance to do it again tomorrow. So step 4 was, like, the epiphany. Well, step 5, but getting into 4, like, putting everything on paper and, like, seeing all that shit and garbage and just turmoil, and it was rough. And then I was gonna, like, have to share that with someone else. Like, I really didn't want to do that. But we got into it, man. It was, like, 96 pages of shit. It took us, like, 7 hours to go over it. And it was, like, the clean slate that I needed. Seeing the part I played in shit, finally owning up to all of it. It was like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. Everybody talks about how bad step 4 is. Well, step 5 is the one that had me ready to puke. Step 4 is just writing down all the dirty shit I knew I'd done. Like, what's so hard about that? sharing that shit was the hardest part. So, yeah, man, like, that's where I'm at today. I gained employment like 6 months clean. It was actually for a bank, if you can believe that. They gave me a chance to do like some maintenance work for them. Did a couple repos here and there. It's actually a credit union. 3 weeks ago, I took a new job. I was in Latrobe. It's called Repairx. They do industrial coatings for like the mining industry, oil and gas. And I get to work with like four other guys that are really, really strong in the recovery, so that's great. This process was like, it wasn't easy. I don't want to call it easy at all. It was super tough. It's not a cookie cutter program. All you got to do is put in some work. And like, I didn't notice the changes at first, but I got everybody else giving me their feedback saying how like things have changed and like I'm growing and like being employable, being able to be a dad, a son, a brother, having like knowing what a healthy relationship is. This side of the spectrum is so much easier. I forgot to mention, like, I got married super young. It was like 2001. I was 21 years old. It lasted 12 years. My addiction tore that apart, but I gained a beautiful daughter from it. She'll be 10 in 2 days. And I couldn't be more proud of her. She just placed like second place in the nationals for cheer. So she's rocking it out. And it's good that, like, without Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be able to be there for that. I couldn't understand in the beginning why everyone wanted to help. I always thought there was like this hidden agenda, like, what do you actually want? Because I ain't got shit to give you. But through, you know, not only coming back, but like staying, I get it. Like, it's what we do here. I remember I had a newcomer with me a couple months ago, and my alternator went in my car, and he was freaking out, like, losing his mind over this. And I made one phone call, and like he came, picked me up, we got the new part, we switched it out within an hour, and life was back to normal. They flew him away. He didn't understand how the hell we did that. He's not mechanically inclined, so, but it was funny. It's amazing, man. Like, all you gotta do is pick up a phone. And anybody is willing to do whatever you need them to do, pretty much, too. Like, it just blows my mind. Building my foundation in the beginning, it was crucial. Like, I had some guidance there. So I was, like, choosing guys that had, like, a year or more recovery. So that's what I did. I surrounded myself with them. And grateful heart, man. Like, a grateful heart in my, like, foundation. When I do that, blessings just start to appear everywhere. I can't explain it. That's just how it happens for me. Doing the next right thing. That's a real thing. It's not just a cliche that we like to say around here. It's actually real. I've experienced it. But, like, it's not about circumstances. You know, when I came into these rooms, I, like, disqualified myself immediately. I figured, like, four-time felon, like, if I get clean, I'm going to be working at McDonald's if I'm lucky. Like, what the hell's the point? What am I even doing here? But it's like the same boiling water that softens a potato, hardens an egg. So it's not about your circumstance, it's about what you're made of. 90 days in, through my foundation, like, they got me involved in H&I. I went to observe. At 6 months, I was speaking there. 10 months clean, they made me facility coordinator for Torrance State Hospital. They waived my clean time. So I'm still involved with that. Like H&I was huge for me. It like gave me a purpose when I felt I didn't have one. Like from day one to 6 months, I didn't do shit but go to meetings and outpatient. And I remember calling my sponsor and I'm like, dude, this is like, what am I doing? Like, and he was like, yeah, I know. You're like ready for more. He's like, there's gonna come a day, like real soon, you're gonna be wishing you had a day off. And, yeah, we're pretty much there, man. My life is entirely full. I work 6 days a week, 5 a.m. to 3:30. Saturdays is like 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. Sometimes it's noon, depends how busy we are. But to this day, I still go to meetings every day. That was my goal for my first year. I did it. We're almost at 14 months, and I'm still doing it. And it's like, it's just what I need. I cannot stay clean from a shower I took yesterday, so I have to like do something daily. So that's what I do. When I can't make them at night, I try to hit nooners. If I can't do that, which it hasn't happened yet, I've like consistently hit one every single day. I pick up the telephone. I talk to people in recovery every single day. Step work. There's always step work to be done. I'm kind of like lacking on step six because I don't like to be told about myself. So we'll get there. I don't know, man. Like, if I could tell you anything, it's like just show up as you are. Like, you don't have to have the answers. You don't have to feel great. All you got to do is show up, and like this fellowship will pretty much handle the rest for you if you don't. It's a beautiful process. It has been for me. I know it's a journey. It's not a destination. Like there's no days off in this shit. Like it's every single day. But yeah, like even with your own insecurities, fear of like rejection, just show up. That's all you gotta do. Like the opinions of others don't matter. All you gotta do is show up for a little bit of work in, and it can literally save and change your life at the same time. That's all I got, guys. Thanks for having me.